To me, the hospitals were 100% worse.
I wasn't prepared for the emotional outpouring from the elders about what they had experienced with the sanatoria in the 50s and 60s. The depth and intensity of pain and anguish which they expressed, I wasn't prepared for.
And more importantly, they get judicial redress for what was done to them. They were innocent little children. These are human beings. We're not guinea pigs.
Patients sent to so-called Indian hospitals and tuberculosis sanatoriums paint a picture of isolation, abuse, and even medical experimentation. Tonight, we travel across the country, back in time, to a very dark chapter in Canadian history. Here's what's left of the Ninette Tuberculosis Sanatorium, just south of Winnipeg, Manitoba. It's hard to believe it's now a private residence. Thousands of Indigenous patients were sent here in the 1940s and 50s, and one of them was Gerald McIver's brother, Michael.
Throughout the 50 years of his life, my brother shared experiences with me of him really questioning the fact whether he had TB or not, and also sharing details of the medical experimentation that was conducted at the Ninette Sanatorium upon him and other Indigenous children. What was in these things? What was in these containers? You know, he would share examples of carts being brought into the dormitory with different colored liquids, and children being made to drink different colored liquids with medical staff standing around them with clipboards documenting every reaction. And then he said, and these were the lucky ones. He said the unlucky ones got injected with various liquids, and again they were subject to people standing around them recording every reaction.
The control and ultimate eradication of tuberculosis. For it was here in the year 1910 that there came into being Manitoba's first institution.
The Sanatorium Board of Manitoba took over from the federal government in 1937, promising to deal with the spread of disease amongst the province's Indigenous peoples. This quote from a 1930s report shows the attitude at the time. We can look forward to the control of tuberculosis amongst this susceptible people, and at the same time, the removal of a menace to the adjacent white population. TB spreads easily through the air, especially in crowded conditions like reserves and residential schools. Racking coughs, weight loss, fatigue, they're all symptoms. Holes can form in the lungs, but it can also affect other parts of the body. It was once considered a public health menace. Until drugs were developed, the only cure was rest. But were actual medical experiments being done at these institutions? Ian Mosby is the researcher who uncovered evidence of shocking nutritional experiments on Indigenous children enrolled at residential schools.
There's a lot of trauma that communities and individuals experienced at these institutions. You know, when I've spoken at events and been at events where survivors have been speaking about residential schools, Indian hospitals invariably come up because these were institutions in which, you know, the barrier between an Indian hospital and a residential school was very, you know, it was very fluid. Answering these questions and listening to survivors, you know, this is, if we learned anything from survivors from the TRC process, is that we need to listen to them. And then, in fact, the TRC has overwhelmingly corroborated what survivors were saying about their experiences.
And Gerald McIver is convinced experiments were done here.
because
he's now starting a lawsuit.
This is crazy. It's really driving home my ambition to see that these people have answers, that they get closure, and more importantly, they get judicial redress for what was done to them. They were innocent little children. These are human beings. We're not guinea pigs.
Case finding among the Indian residents of Manitoba was given special emphasis in 1947 when yearly X-ray surveys for Indians began.
TB exploded amongst Canada's Indigenous people. It's a debilitating disease born of settler contact. Death rates were amongst the highest ever recorded in the world, at one point reaching 662 deaths per 100,000 people. In fact, it topped the list as the primary cause of death. And in residential schools, even more deadly, as high as 8,000 deaths per 100,000 children. The government virtually ignored the problem for decades. When they finally acted in the 1940s, they began massive surveys of the reserves, sending out X-ray vans like this, often on treaty days.
Well, they flat out would not pay people their treaty annuity until they had their chest X-ray. It was just straight out. You don't get your annuity until you have your X-ray and all your family.
Brock University Professor Maureen Lux's book, Separate Beds, revealed that children at Fort Qu'Appelle Residential School in Saskatchewan were guinea pigs for early TB vaccines. She points out that people could be arrested if they refuse treatment.
And it actually criminalizes in ill health. So the Indian Act gave police the power to force someone to be seen by a physician, to force somebody into hospital, and of course to return somebody that left hospital against medical advice.
If TB was detected, people were yanked from their homes and sent to hospitals far away.
The kind of strident rhetoric about Indian tuberculosis infecting virtuous people was seen as a direct health threat to the country.
Same is true here at Brandon Sanatorium, where these Indian girls from the reserves and communities of the North are getting identical nursing care and treatment.
Indigenous patients were also good for business.
And the business managers and the provincial entities that operated these sanatoria needed patients. And the federal government and the Indian Health Service was anxious to remove people from their communities, especially the Inuit, as a measure to, you know, treat them, but also as a measure to entice assimilation.
And the same scenario played out across the country for decades. Dorothy Wanahade spent 2 years at Charles Campbell Hospital in Edmonton.
Well, my mother said that I was not sick, so I don't remember being sick. And she said they just took you. My worst fear, probably just, I don't know, just a memory coming back. I think that would be my worst fear.
With daughter Victoria's help, she's trying to piece together just what happened to her.
They should be compensated for the time that they spent in that hospital, for the hurt that was done to them, and they need to heal.
Monhare remembers patients coming back to the reserve with ribs removed and missing pieces of their lungs. Disfiguring surgeries were done on Indigenous patients into the 1960s. Even though they had been largely halted on non-Indigenous patients 2 decades earlier. Western Inuit also ended up at the Charles Campbell, and some patients didn't have time to tell family where they were going. And some they simply never came home. Up until 1990, these Inuit patient graves at Edmonton's St. Albert Cemetery were unmarked. Marilyn Buffalo's grandmother, Harriet Buffalo, was first a patient and then a hospital employee.
Working as a ward aide and a caregiver in the hospital. So if you see the names here, she would have known them all personally.
And her stepfather went to the residential school here on site.
My stepfather was here, and he talked about, you know, as a young man, that they dug graves here for the people from Charles Kamsel.
Hmm. So they would come from Kamsel and bring people here to
Yes. Right now, the rights of the individuals, the former patients, and their families should have access to their medical records. For me, I demand my great-grandmother Harriet Johnson's medical files, and I demand my grandmother Harriet Buffalo medical files. In order for me to put closure to this, I want to have a ceremony where I can have access to those information, and then I could sit with my family. She suffered greatly right until her death. She carried so much, and she was really quiet about it, and that she was very careful and guarded in who she shared information with as a result of that suffering that she went through.
Those from the Eastern North were sent by the C.D. Howe ship here to the Mountain Sanatorium in Hamilton, Ontario.
They were swept down to the sanatoria and didn't return. So the gnawing desperation of what was said was rooted in the loss of family members. They didn't know when they died, and they didn't know when they were buried, and they know the records exist, and no one will tell them. So there is a kind of angry bewilderment.
Some patients also ended up on Vancouver Island.
To me, the hospitals were 100% worse because they could do the shock treatment.
We'll have those stories when we come back. Tuberculosis among the Inuit is not in the distant past. In fact, infection rates are still record high. International AIDS advocate Stephen Lewis hadn't planned to go north, but was shocked by the history he heard in Nunavut.
I wasn't prepared for the emotional outpouring from the elders about what they had experienced with the sanatoria in the 50s and 60s. The depth and intensity of pain and anguish which they expressed, I wasn't prepared for. I consider it a crime. I mean, I wish there were ways of taking crimes against humanity into court, because I think what the Canadian governments have done cumulatively to Indigenous persons across this country is a crime against humanity. I don't know how else to characterize it. They were swept down to the sanatoria and didn't return. So the gnawing desperation of what was said was rooted in the loss of family members. They didn't know when they died, and they didn't know when they were buried, and they know the records exist, and no one will tell them. So there is a kind of angry bewilderment. The excruciating violations, the racism around tuberculosis in the 50s and 60s has so traumatized people to this day that it's part of the stigma, that they don't want to come forward and be tested and talk about TB because they're afraid of the inheritance of the legacy which their parents and grandparents suffered.
TB has always hit Inuit hard. At one point in the 1950s, more than a third of the population was affected. And 1/7 of the entire population was being treated down south. Here at the Art Gallery of Hamilton, Carving Home tells the history of Inuit patients at the city's Mountain Sanatorium. Author Sean Salway's mother was a nurse at the time. His book tells the story of the massive evacuations of the North.
If you were diagnosed with tuberculosis in Cape Dorset and remained on the ship to return to Montreal, you would be quite a while down below decks.
Inuit were assigned an identification disc, like the one shown here.
And so, in order to avoid that kind of confusion, essentially, to make things easier for administration, people had a number. So one person, one number. And you can see there's a hole there, and you were supposed to wear that around your neck.
McMaster University records show the Inuit were also good for business, filling beds left empty by cured white patients. Found in the memoirs of Dr. Hugo Ewart is this. He worked at the mountain for years. Just as the decline took place, I had a call from Ottawa one day to see if we could take a few Eskimos. And we said yes, how many? They said, well, about 50 probably. Within a year and a half, we had 332, I think it was. I think that was the high point. We tried to treat them as human beings.
When they were bringing people out, they were evacuating them very rapidly and without, without an opportunity to make arrangements for the people you've left behind. But those communities are very tightly knit and with lots of adoptees and so on. And so when you start taking people out of that, it caused a lot of problems. And it caused a great many problems, obviously, for the people who are removed because they don't know what's happening back home.
In total, more than 5,000 Inuit were sent south. Inuit men were given soapstone to carve, and women made these dolls. Inuit were also subject to assimilation, as this hymn book translated into Inuktitut attests. And like the council patients, those who died were buried thousands of kilometers from home.
Home, hey?
Yes, indeed it is.
37 names are carved onto this memorial in Hamilton's Woodland Cemetery. Families wouldn't always be told someone had died, and many do not know where their loved ones are buried. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau promised to deal with this painful history in spring 2017. And a fall 2017 task force announcement by Minister Jane Philpott seems to offer some hope.
This is not a new problem. Tuberculosis has been present in Canada's Inuit for more than a century. And we have seen not only those very, very high rates, but we've seen these terrible circumstances where people had to leave their homes in the 1940s, in the 50s, in the 60s, that they were sent thousands of kilometers away from home, and that their families many times never knew what happened, and that they were buried in grave sites that are still sometimes unmarked.
What about the other Indigenous patients? In fact, Indian hospitals and sanatoriums were left out of the Indian Residential School settlement that is now winding down. But some of the same issues resound.
The Indian hospitals didn't operate on their own. They always worked with a residential school. To me, the hospitals were 100% worse because they could do the shock treatment. They could do, and they didn't have to, remember, this is the 40s till the 60s. Up until the 40s, no records were kept.
Joan Morris's mother, Mary, spent 17 years at the Nanaimo Indian Hospital. Doctors told her she had TB.
They did mass experimentation on our people. Lots lost lungs, ribs,
It was Joan's testimony at the Truth and Reconciliation Commission that inspired author Gary Geddes to write this book, Medicine Unbundled.
Hearing that her mother had spent 17 years in the Nanaimo Indian Hospital just staggered me. I couldn't get it out of my mind. And when I had a chance to talk to her and got even more of the information, it just seemed to me the story needed to be told.
She said the needle was that long. They put it directly in the belly button, injected them. An hour later, they blew up.
And it was a point of pride for the government that care for Indigenous patients cost less.
The government was quite happy to brag about being able to handle Indigenous health issues at 50% of the cost of health for the rest of the population.
We can't let these people get to the medical profession, get away with what's been done to our people.
We waited for a federal response for 2 months. We're still waiting. The federal government has been working on a database of missing Inuit for the last decade. Nothing is planned for the other Indigenous patients that suffered. Now, Gerald McIver says he hopes his lawsuit will spread across the country.
Well, the wound is not healed. The wound may be closed at the top with a scab, but it's still festering inside and it's damaging and eating away at the people.
And back in their home communities, survivors and their families wait.
They look at it and say, oh, what a beautiful place, right? What a beautiful hospital. But yet, they don't know what went on inside, you know? What the people were enduring is.
So, one system fed into the other, but I learned very early in life that it was just one system, one policy, and that was to break the child, to break up the family. And I thought, this is wrong, very wrong.
Coming up next week on APTN Investigates, Crime and Injustice.
Indigenous men and women carry a lot of disadvantage with them, and they carry a lot of disadvantage that flows directly from colonial contact. So intergenerational trauma, the lingering effects of residential schools, of the 60s school.
These systems and structures were not set up to achieve justice for Indigenous peoples. These systems and structures were set up to control, manage, assimilate, eliminate.
There is racism within the justice system, there's no doubt about that. I think we see racism in the police forces. We see unconscious racism within the laws of this country. We haven't changed the procedures in the criminal code or the criminal laws of this country in any significant way for 100 years or more.